Hello, everybody. Welcome to Sonic Talk, episode 793, recorded today on Wednesday. I think it's the 13th of March. Is that the Ides? I don't know. Maybe I should look around, make sure I'm not about to be accosted on the steps by a bunch of senators. Maybe not, though. I think we'll be all right. Anyway, this isn't really a historical podcast. It's to do with music technology. That's right. We talk about all things to do with that world, whether it's software, hardware, synthesizers, drum machines, music production, studio work, live production, touring, you know, anything that's streaming, anything that really kind of fits the bill, and that as such we will attempt to cover it. But we've also got some really exciting guests on this week as well who want to talk about a new release, and they're also welcome. We've been had them on before the show, but I'm going to leave that and what they call a tease. How meta. Yes, anyway, so on to our guests this week. We've got, well, let's start over in probably furthest away. Heimbach, how are you?
Hi, nice to see you again, Nick. I'm in Berlin, of course, and I'm doing well.
Yes.
Thank you.
Excellent. I'm glad to see you. I don't know whether it's just winter and there's no daylight there, but I'm glad to see you going for proper studio tan. There's no daylight in your room, right?
There actually is, but I closed it all down because it's going to be night in a bit. It's going to go dark in a bit, so it would have like changed light during the filming.
Continuity.
And that would be distracting. Yes.
What a pro. Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the very best tips for continuity was I got from Andrew, I think. It was about like wearing hats, you know? So whenever you film on different days, you can just put on the same hat and then you're back in the continuity, even though your hat might be a little bit messed up or different. That was a good tip.
Well, also, the other thing which you may be interested in next time you're purchasing jumpers in, I often buy shirts in twos, so that if I'm doing a review and it's summer, I don't have to wear the same shirt for however long it takes me to film. So I don't know whether your storage facilities would allow for double jumper action. I'm not sure. It might be a little bit too much to ask for. I'm not sure.
My wallet won't allow for it, I'm afraid.
No, well, there's that too. Perhaps not. Anyway, lovely to have you, Heimbach. Heimbach, of course, is a musician, experimental sound designer, and producer and performer, all of those things. And part of the reason they're here is to talk about the new EP, which is in conjunction with... Ta-da! Hey, Sam.
Hello.
I'm no computer.
How you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Yeah,
I'm doing very well.
For content... Yeah, you're good. Oh, yeah. Thank you for having us on, by the way, Nick. It's always a pleasure. But I just remember, before I forget, for continuity, another tip that I heard a while back from a lizard was always wear the same. Remember to wear the same skin.
Yeah, that's always true.
You do not remember to do that. You can't wear the same skin. Remember that Men in Black bit?
Oh gosh!
Sorry, I'm going to shut up.
That could be troublesome. That could be trouble. Anyway, Sam, I can see you're in front of your beautiful bank of your filter bank, and are they are they oscillators?
What testosterators?
Testosterators. There's your new EP title. All right, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, I've been fixing those ones. I've got a bunch more that are at the museum, but I took these back to make sure they worked for a video that I'm doing, a project next to the... Oh, no, I've got to remember. I'm looking at the camera. It's the other way around. Next to the synth I'm practicing because I'm going on tour. So, yeah, all of that stuff's back there, but it always changes back there.
Are they the B&K ones, or are they?
They're B&Q. B&Q's finest. Brule & Kjær. They're Brule & Kjær. So if I'm pointing, the delay. There's oscillators, beat frequency oscillators, and there's a bunch of filters, which Heimbach, I'm sure, can tell you much more than I can about them. And that's it. Basically, oscillators and stuff.
Yeah, that B&K filter, I did a remix with Goldfrapp about, I can't remember, it was one of the Strict Machine ones, and there was this just really long sweep for a B&K filter, and it just kind of go, that cue is just...
Oh, wow.
You opening a suitcase
where
there.
Where was that one?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was just, I wanted to add also my Brule & Kjær filter because it's not here. I mean, it's almost traditional that every time I'm on the podcast, I need to bring out the...
Oh, we lost him. He's pulled the wire off.
He's pulled the wire.
I'm here.
The cable got pulled out. He's back. He's back. He's back. It's okay.
No, I've also got one here. That's nice. Oh, I unplugged it. Talking about Brule & Kjær.
Oh, he's got it. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
this is a Brule
off. That's nice.
Brule & Kjær off.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Bull
Chaos.
So, I actually was Nick, in the Rode and Schwarz magazine at some point.
No. I did.
Yeah,
I did,
yeah, they put me in there.
Bull and Care as well.
Ooh.
So that's cool. So what, like a cat in the calendar, center spread?
Yes, exactly like this. No, just the regular killer, just the regular magazine.
That's good. That's awesome. Nice. Now, well, Nick, where was the Brawl and Cure filter that you did the remix with?
It was a guy called Charlie Jones, who's a bass player of note in the UK. Bass player used to play with Goldfrapp Live, but it was also involved with I can't remember what his name is now, the singer from Led Zeppelin. He was on tour with him for years and years and years, and Charlie Jones has got a great studio with lots of vintage stuff. And
Robert Plant.
Yeah, Robert Plant, thank you very much.
Yeah took a while to remember.
Yeah, phew. Oh, cool. I can only access so much of my buffer while I'm producing the show at the same time, and that piece was definitely not available for me. But thank you, much appreciated.
Stefan's still hugging his filter.
I'm trying to put it down without making too much noise, which is hard because it's very heavy.
Okay, well, now we've got that introduction out of the way. Paulie Bow, Magical Synth Adventure. A nice ukulele and a couple of Akai samplers you've got there. So very much in different, more of a sort of vintage digital and approach. But lovely to have you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, actually. I'm trying to get sleep whenever I can. what with
yes,
two
new
kids
babies.
Now. Wild.
Oh, two! Yeah.
But no,
two,
I'm good.
Wow!
Two, I know. I'm breeding a band, Sam, is what I'm doing. Essentially.
What are you aiming for? You know, hopefully you're not aiming for the Eagles.
No. You mean the full touring lineup? No.
Yeah.
Le Mister Le Voix Belgaire, perhaps, if you go, yeah, I don't know.
But,
that would be a challenge.
Maybe just, you know, the four of us can be a kind of low-budget
Partridge
Kraftwerk.
Family. All the Osmonds.
Partridge Family Kraftwerk kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, it's good. And I've actually had some time to do some bits and pieces. Like I did the Mega Synthesis review on a little website called Sonic State.
That was great.
Which was fun, just making loads of weird Mega Drive sounds, you know. So that was really fun. But no, I'm good, thank you. Yeah.
Excellent. Busy, well, glad to have you. That reminds me, I'm supposed to do the coming up thing as well, which I always forget to do. Pittsburgh Modular Tiger keyboard reviews up, as well as Paulie's Mega Synthesis. And London Synth and Pedal Expo is going to be this weekend. If I post that, that'll probably do the... I'll do the link. Yeah, you can get to that. It's free to get in, on for a couple of days. I'll be there Saturday and Sunday, so say hello. I've heard it can be a bit full on, lots of people there, so it should be fun. Anyway, I'm going to be going to that. So, there's just so much to cover. I think maybe what we'll do, should we talk EP first? Let's get that sort of on the go, because then we get some more context. I did actually take the liberty of downloading a little bit of the video that was on, because the video that you sent me, Heimbach, has now become a premiere, which is on a little bit later. Is launching, which is the thing, because you use the Tascam 4-track as the sort of heart of much of this EP. So let's just play a little bit of video, and then we've got the gubbins. So let's just press that now and see what happens. I'll probably get busted on your copyright algorithm, but I just don't stars care. Above. Yes, it's a new EP. Canter, looking up,
stars above, via Allah, rolling back,
Dostecken. This is a kind of teaser and a promo video, I guess. We
are. Yes, Stefan did a good job with this one.
Yeah, no, really good. Anyway, I won't play it all because you can see it on the Bandcamp page, which is, I think, when I press that, that'll do it, don't it? That'll put the link, which has probably all been posted. So that goes in the chat at the same time and a chapter marker, so that all works. So this new EP is really interesting because, a bit of context, because obviously you did the first one, which was... Rotoplops, and which just sort of happened naturally. You were just sort of getting together, and then this one was a bit more planned. It's a really, I have to say, I think it sounds amazing, and that's presumably because at the heart of it, did you decide to create a kind of set of tools that you wouldn't deviate from? Because it could have been an awful lot easier to make if you had, you know, used other tools, I'd imagine. I don't know who wants to go first with that.
It's a mixture of tools. I just wanted to get a recording setup that works well, because the last time we tried to record on my little Tour Nagra that I had with me, but it died on the spot, but we loved the sound of that, and I just wanted to get at least a bit of tape involved. So I looked at what 4-track tape recorder was cheap, and I found the 3440 for like $600, and it was working-ish. I think it was constantly dropping the belt. The belt was like ripping off, and at some point, I think the last track, Pipe Dreams, when we recorded, the belt slipped up at the last moment. Like, we had just finished, and then that was just something. I just wanted to create an environment, because I knew we had limited time. It was the first time that Sam came over to Berlin, and I've only come to his place, so I didn't know what to expect. I just wanted to make sure that the basic setup is nice, and we have got something to work with, and there's a spot where we can work and record. And then Sam brought some crazy stuff and had more ideas for more crazy stuff. And every song is an experiment. Every song was like, we try one thing. Sometimes Sam built something, or we built something by going to the local hardware store. And every song has an experiment at heart.
Yeah, brilliant. I think go for it.
Oh, that's all right. I was just with the limitation question, the thing that you had in you were mentioning first. Well, the first thing, the Rotopops thing that we did, we automatically had a bit of a limitation because we just didn't have much time to experiment with other setups. So we were just like, let's stick with this and try and get as many songs as we can. And the first one, I think, Stefan, am I right in thinking we actually got it all done in two half days, five songs done. So all of the instrumentation we did the first day, and then we just sat down and we're like, oh, what should we sing over the top of this for the second day? And we wanted to keep that kind of feeling with the next one. So I think it was only 3 to 4 days. Okay, it went to his, and we had a plan of getting 5 songs, the same as the last one, just pressing record on the tape machine and having a setup that we would rely on. And it ended up being what were you playing, the keyboard?
I was playing a Zelma Klaviolin from like 1952, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it was monophonic. Roland, monophonic. Yeah, we have almost no polyphonic synthesizer, except at the end. Where there's one arpeggio from the Juno 60.
Yeah, which is monophonic in essence, I guess. But the funny thing is that each time we were like, right, the next one we will pull out a polyphonic synthesizer. But that just didn't happen. So it just ended up just being 2 keyboards and a drum machine and then the tape machine and a bunch of effects that Heimbach had sitting about, of course.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is you were using a lot of tape production tricks, you know, like recording at half speed and speeding the tape up and vice versa. And that first track that we played there, I think you were singing the vocals, but you must have recorded that at a different pitch because the transients are all off. It sounds a bit sort of...
No.
Otherworldly. No, is that you? No, just after what's the opposite of helium?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's sulfur. No, that would kill you. But I was like, it's a bit of a party trick, so it takes a bit of practice. But you could be like, you just take away the transient. I'm messing with you. I don't know how Stefan managed to sync it up with the video. That's a question I got high back. How did you sync up what I was saying, because it was on a slower speed on the tape?
I slowed it down because I did 2 things for the video that drops later. I also recorded everything that I was saying onto the tape machine while it was running, which was running out of sync all the time. So I had to do like manually aligning the tape machine with the video all the time. But I just slowed you down by like, I think it was 3 frames. So I just, doesn't notice the 3 frames. Yeah, but the thing was like, what you did, you said one thing, and it was about, can we do that TikTok effect, you know?
Oh, yeah.
How we came about that vocal effect. Do you remember?
Yeah, Sam? Yeah. Yeah, yes. So you said,
What was the inspiration again for that?
I cannot remember. It was just there was that, you know, on TikTok they slow a bunch of songs down, and it was just for some reason I thought that would be cool because I don't really go on TikTok much, but when I do, I hear it makes songs sound better. Oh, it was the MGMT one that sounds really good. Like you know that what is it? I can't remember the song. But there's a couple of really good songs that get used a lot that are just basically slowed down and sound epic. Like the drums are like, but you know, Nick, like it's all the tape effects that you were talking about. You record tape speed, another bit the other speed.
What's really interesting here, I mean, there's this sort of, it's grit and thunder that you get. It's like distortion. It's really sort of chatters, and it's very specific. Was that tape saturation, or was that stuff that you did afterwards? Particularly notice it on the kick drum of that beat.
It was all the tape.
It was all the tape. Like when you take that drummer one, that was the Elka drummer one, the classic Rautrock drum machine, we put on there, and as soon when you record it on tape at 15 IPS, half speed, that it just sounds like a Linn drum or something, like a real drum. It sounds really, really good. It was all the tape, but also that tape machine, like all TEC and Tascam, it sounds so good when driven. All the input overdrive on those, that's really another part of the sound. It's the tape and the input overdrive, and of course that this machine was not really serviced. There was a lot of crosstalk, and so that was all a positive, basically. And I did one mistake, like in mixing, because Sam had already left and I had started to mix, and then I started cleaning things up. And then Sam came back with the video evidence and said, Heimbach, when you look at the that part of the video at that time frame, you can hear it sounds a bit more raw. And I was like, it does. And I basically pulled on all the processing away, and I tried to keep it as close to the original 4-track tape as possible with just some minor cleanups.
But that's the thing, you know, you have to sometimes going around the houses, around the block of houses to get back to the first idea. It's the artistic process, isn't it? I'm sure we all do that at time to time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting, though, the way that that's why it's like thunder, because that kick drum has got a lot of oof to it. There's one bit where you start, and I'm listening, I've got a little pair of those MTM IKs, which are quite broad range, and I was listening to it. There's one track, I forget which one it was, where you start and then you pitch it down, and it's already at the beginning, there's this massive bass drum, and then it just goes down, and it sort of almost goes away, but it's still there in this kind of weird soupiness, which I really like. And it's very cling clang in a sort of it's like dirty. Dirty cling clang, I think, is the
dirty
cling clang.
Yeah, and that's one of the beautiful things. Like, we could have chosen to do digital at any point. Like, the tape machine was also wired basically to like a 4-track to my laptop, so for transfers later. And we could have done digital all the time, so we could have done clean recordings easily. But now that we can afford to go dirty, as like, because we don't have to rely on tape. We choose it for the sound, and that's one of the freedoms that's absolutely amazing. And there's two more tricks to that kick drum. The first one is my tech modded that Elka drum machine to have a bit more of an oomph on the kick drum, and I'm using an equalizer, a vacuum tube equalizer called the Blondertongue by Barton. So, which is like this rainbow colored vacuum tube 10 band equalizer, which sounds absolutely gorgeous, and that shapes the sound of that drum machine, which is very, very, it is very krautrock. This is like a drum machine that was very common in the 70s in Germany and used by many krautrock bands, like I think Harmonia had one also.
I think there's a bit in Stefan's video where you see it, where the first time of playing the drums and then the button to slow it down, I think it's a bit more raw, like you just hear that first bit where it's just like proper dry. I don't know where it is in it's in your video, isn't it, Stefan?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you can hear the AB, definitely. You can watch that later.
Did you transfer the tapes to computer at some point, because obviously it's going to, you know, you don't really want to be rewinding 1,000 times on something that's 35, 40 years old.
After we recorded the vocals that we wanted you know, to be not as fidelic. I don't know if that's a word, but that everything was recorded onto the tape, shoved in. And then there was, I think there were a couple of the vocals were overdubbed afterwards because we were at the point where it's like, oh, let's go to the pub. But we wanted to lay it down. And then we recorded after some of the vocals on Stefan's lappy toppy.
Do you think
after the pub?
Do you think that? Do you think the adversity of, because there was one point in the promo video, which is it's on Hi-Max channel later. I think it starts at is it 7 o'clock UK time, something like that. There's a premiere anyway. There's a one point in that video where you say, "Oh, we're going to have to play it better," because when you when you're speeding up and slowing down, your sense of timing is related to the tempo you're working at, not the tempo that you are. So all your shall we call it feel becomes exaggerated and wrong. So do you think that sort of adversity made you, I mean, I don't know how accomplished you are as players, I can't, you know, but was that hard? Did it make a big difference?
Yeah, I would say it was very hard. Yeah. It was very hard because I play.
Carry on, Stefan.
Sorry.
Okay. For me, it was very hard because I play very slowly. I do mostly ambient music and I do very little things. So playing this fast felt very technical for me because, so the way is like when you play at double the speed that you wrote the song, everything becomes very technical, but you still have to have feeling. And the SH2 that Sam was playing had a horrible keyboard that was also...
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. I have a real tendency of adding too many trill notes in the bass lines. I don't know. We just found out that I'm the bass guy. Stefan's the lead melody guy, and then we mix it all up on the top. But the second, I just added too many trills, like, you know, passing notes in the bass lines. But then it got so... It's like... It was something that when it slows down, it's like, really sounds good, but it just took a lot of fiddling, especially on the keybed that is on the SH2. Sounds good, but my gosh, that keyboard is horrific.
It's a bit like the what's that Russian one that's just sort of almost made of
Polyvox
organic. Yeah, it's like a Polyvox keyboard, that one, isn't it? What made you choose the SH2, Sam? Because they've got legendary amounts of low end already, those ones?
Well, it was because what Stefan has around, he's got some very esoteric machines and stuff. But sometimes I think with this project, I think just for my part, I just think a very simple monophonic synth that's not got too many trills is the instrument to use. Mm-hmm. It's like being in a band playing guitar. Usually the guitarist only has a couple of effects pedals. It's not like they have a million trillion LFOs and stuff. Sometimes when you've got one thing that just works, you can get everything you need to out of it. That's why we went for the SH2, which I think was one of your first synths, was it, Stefan?
Yeah, that was my very first or the second analog synth I ever got. And before I had a GP8000, and after I heard the SH2 and had it in my studio 30 years ago or something, I never looked at the GP8000 again because that didn't sound as good as that one. It's it's kind of a magical synthesizer. It's not hard and it's very soft but heavy. And it just does this beautiful detuning on the saws. It's like a Jupiter 4 in a way. Oof.
Mm. Nice. I know, Paulie, whether you had any questions. You probably had a bit of a listen to the EP as well. Anything you'd like to ask?
It's bleak as hell. I love it. It was great. I had it on while I was doing some menial household tasks, and it, you know, really kind of was a highlight of my somewhat dull morning. But I wanted to ask about essentially the songwriting process in terms of the concept. So the whole kind of musical thing, it sounds like you got the music done first and then you wanted to add lyrics and different kind of conceptual ideas to it after. I think I do that too. I'm always a music first kind of person, and then I kind of add. I know other people do all the lyrics and writing and stuff first. I just wanted to ask what informed your kind of songwriting, lyric writing process this time.
strangely enough, actually, because I was finishing editing my video that's coming up around the same time as Stefan's video tonight. My video is covering the first track, which is Music in the Mirror. Funnily enough, actually started with Stefan. I have this weird microphone, and then Stefan was like, "Music in the Mirror." Oh, and we're like, let's go with that. So we walked over to the synthesizers, and the weird thing about this project, I don't know what it is, but there's no conscious decision that goes through. I don't think my brain or Stefan's brain, they literally, the first thing we play, we're like, let's go with that. And then literally that's what we do, and then half an hour later we've recorded a take. It's really kind of weird the way it's done, but with that one specifically, it was Music in the Mirror, oh, oh, oh. And then we just kind of like jammed underneath it. The other ones, I think, were a little bit more music first and then just shove vocals on. Stefan, please elaborate.
What I noticed when I edited was like, we're constantly singing. We're constantly singing like nonsense lyrics. There was one where we did like Schneider's Laden is very close by. So we went there for a visit and we looked at all the synthesizers. And then there's a part where we're like, there's just a beat that we're like recording this later on. And then we're both singing about the synthesizer shop and all the synthesizers that they got and all the synthesizers that we want. I want an Oberheim. I want a Prophet 5. constantly. And then we're singing like a country song about Texas Red. And it was, there's, and like Oompa Loompa, there's constant singing involved. Like the same time we're making the music, there's constantly like this lyric writing process happening. And sometimes there's an idea that just sticks and then we repeat that. And there was one track where we literally were looking at all the test equipment that was around and we just picked crazy sounding German words like Dämpfungssperre and stuff like that. But then we contrasted those very technical German terms with like English translations and suddenly something beautiful and meaning more than these terms comes out. And it's both like referential of the process of making the music, but also tells something different. And for some reason, I think like there's an underlying current of who are we, what are we, that is in that. And it's a bit Babylonian because we're mixing the languages also.
Yeah.
It's interesting, actually. Sorry, I was just going to say it's interesting because I think Paulie mentioned it when I sent them the link, you know, said it reminds them of sort of the Bowie's Berlin phase, you know, the low sort of vibe as well. There's definitely that. And I know the way that Bowie used to write lyrics was quite like juxtaposition and cut up as well. So in a weird way, there's a sort of another connection with that whole era, which is perhaps not considered when it was going together. It just seems to be a coincidence, possibly. I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah, but it might be. I don't know. The fact that we were trying to avoid having, well, there was a computer recording with for backup, but the fact that there was no real kind of modern stuff going on, it just, you know, kept us away from social media quite a lot and things like that, except we had to keep on making sure the cameras were filming. So yeah, I'm living a lie. Bloody cameras. Yeah, well, no, how many megabytes? Not megabytes. Yeah, it's lots. Gigabytes.
That's terabyte?
Yeah. It's a lot.
Nearly a terabyte. I mean,
I know. Easily. It's not a problem.
The thing, isn't it? Like, I'm sure you all feel that. You all have that as well, Nick. Like, the other side of having to do these, you know, playing, trying to play and make musical things for TV. You've got to remember that you've got the other side of your head on the cameras and all that stuff, making sure that it's captured for the other part of this medium.
It's a lot easier here because everything is just set up. All I'll have to do is I've got a step ladder that I put where I'm going to stand that's got a piece of tape on it with a square wave that I focus the camera on. And that's pretty much, because these mostly stay in position for the stuff that I do here. If it was like you are, a sort of more verite type approach where someone's actually having to hold the camera, you're having to move it, set up each shot, then you get a lot more bogged down in that and wait a minute, I can only see half your face or whatever because the lighting's wrong. It's auto is your friend, and many cases using a phone is by far the best.
We did that, yeah. For when we filmed like the last two tracks, I think it was like, okay, now here, we're walking, because we're also walking around like in the hardware store, and we wanted to film like clandestinely. Yeah. Do you say that like
yes,
that?
Yes, that's.
So we filmed like that, and I mean these phones are fantastic for that now. So it's good when you got good lighting. It's exactly. easier, and it helps with the speed of things. And oftentimes that's what you want.
Yeah. Well, it's what we use. That's why we moved to phones for all our show coverage now, because if you're spending time thinking about photography, then you're probably not going to ask a very pertinent question about the pulse width modulation cycle on that oscillator or whatever it may be. That's just a I'm just plucking an example from thin air. Yeah, exactly.
Funny thing is BBC News came around to film something on the organ a couple of months ago, and they were all just using iPhones.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is mad. Blew my mind.
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, we're nearly there. I mean, we don't use iPhones because they're too expensive, because we need five rigs for a show, or four or five rigs, and it's kind of like, I mean, when we can afford the last generation that will use the stuff that we do, then we do. But we use Android Sony phones, because they've got Sony CCDs, so they're actually quite good for, you know, and they're not very expensive. So that's a top tip. And also, you've got a USB-C connector in that phone, which means you could do all the things that you would have to wait until iPhone 15 Pro Max to get a USB-C connection and plug your drives and USB hubs and all that.
They're still on Lightning, aren't they?
I'm not prepared to spend £1,000 just to have a USB-C port.
No.
There we go. All right. Well, fascinating. So this is out now. This is available. I mean, are you getting the bug now? Are you thinking, well, let's just do it again? Or are you now what you can do is you can form a kind of a really ostentatious supergroup, do Prague, and rent massive mansions and weird locations and bring all your recording equipment and do, you know, and do it that way, and then start doing location based recordings. You ready for that, guys?
You joke that, but that's, I mean, a slightly lower budget version of that, where we're trying to plan.
I knew it.
Some kind of bizarre retreat, is it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, like, you know, we were likening it to some kind of monster, Metallica, you know, when they all set up in a warehouse. And then Lars Ulrich makes James Hetfield cry.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure you wouldn't do that. You're far too kind to each other, I'm sure.
There's one thing downstairs in my cellar. That's the biggest thing that I have. It's bigger than my piano, and it's something that I'm looking forward, like when Sam comes around on his tour, maybe drop by and maybe we'll make something with that. It's ridiculous. It's huge. It's wonderful. And it's just one of those things that's perfect to explore together for a project like that, because we both love ridiculous things.
Top secret machine.
Interesting.
Top secret machine.
Will you go to tape for that as well? Are you going to, have you done tape to this extent this time?
I
think it's floppy disks.
Floppy disks. No, but I actually bought a tape recorder for Sam too now. So that should be here.
Yeah, because the Tayac 3440s are a lot more expensive in the UK. I've been trying to find one, but you can't get one for under a grand.
Another one to look at is the Brenel 8-track, 1-inch 8-track. That's a really... I don't think they're cheap.
How do you spell Brenel?
I think it's double N-E. I'm not sure if it's double L. I remember I worked on a project where that's what they had, and it's a really chunky machine, but it's a 1-inch head block for 8-track. So you've got really good... taste. Yeah. I don't know how much they go for, but it's worth looking at. I did an album with somebody on that, and it sounds lovely, actually. And it's, you know, that's... I think Brunel did... I think they're English. I'm not sure. I would have to forget, but it's quite an obscure one. There you go. I can't believe I've actually announced a brand that you weren't aware of, Sam. I feel like my work here is done. If I had a mic, but I don't.
I don't know much, but Stefan knows it. I kind of happen upon things, but... Oh, there was one that went for £500 recently.
What, Brenel?
It was broken.
Brenel, beautiful.
Yeah, this is the problem. We're talking on a live stream now. £3,500. Yeah, that's a lot of dosh.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Well,
okay.
Anyway, we're talking too much about this thing. Maybe I mean I don't mind. Well, I could
That's
talk.
All right.
We could
no,
talk for days. But
well, I think you know. I'm perfectly happy to bring out another. I should bring out another topic, which I think is always kind of interesting, and I think in some ways is has a certain amount of. Let's see, how are we doing for time? Because I think if we can get two more topics in, I know it's 20 to 5 and we've been chatting away. Yeah. Are we okay for time tonight? Because I think if we do this topic and the trash one as well, then we're kind of covered. Because trash is going to be, they're also obviously Isotope are an advertiser, but it just so happens they've re-released this. So, I mean, you know, kill two birds with one stone, eh? All right, let's do this. So I'm going to press the button for number one now, and this will definitely get us busted.
Oh yeah.
So this is the new. If I turn it down, then nothing will happen. So I'll wait till he gets to the bit where he's talking about his. Come on, don't want this bit. I want the bit where.
Sheeran, and this is the Sheeran Looper X, which is a multi-track looper pedal designed by me and my production team.
Oh, it's still underneath. Damn.
Looper X features the same die-cast aluminium pedals as my Stadium Looper. We built in a 7-inch high-resolution multi-touch display and added visual LED feedback just like my Stadium Looper. Looper X features 5 creative looper modes and remix functions like reverse, fade, and bounce. We've added a full multi-effects engine powered by Headrush with 26 individual effects and 9 multi-effects racks. Looper X has full connectivity for instruments.
Okay, I mean, I'm busted anyway, but I suppose those are... Because that's the problem when you build up stuff with loopers. Even the individual elements are going to be copyright protected because they are present in the song. Ed Sheeran, though, I mean, as we know, he's one of those artists who came up through the looper. There are many of them, actually. There's also... what's her name? Ariana Grande, who is an extremely talented musician, very high pop priestess. But she's a monster looper as well. There's some early videos of her just building stuff up. This is an interesting one. I mean, it's not cheap. It's £1,200. But, I mean, you'd think if anyone knows how to make a looper that kind of... keeps the cognitive load of the performer sort of to a minimum, it's going to be Ed Sheeran. Because he essentially, when he said Stadium Looper, that's pretty much what he's doing, isn't it? I mean, his show is him and a looper. So, I mean, this is kind of interesting.
What looper did he use before?
Well, that's a good question. I think he must have used the RC-505 because everybody does that. But I think he, you know, not long after he would have had the money to be able to have something built to his own specifications, I'm sure, which is probably this is a kind of production version of that. There is a smaller version as well. I mean, it's got just a few bit of facts and figures. Only 4 tracks, interestingly. The 505 is 5. 4 combi ins, 2 XLR outs, SD card. Big LCD with lots of kind of visual feedback, which I thought was the very interesting thing, because I don't know if anybody's tried to perform with a looper. It's really hard, man. You need to practice and practice and practice so that the muscle memory is there. It's any visual feedback that is superfluous could possibly slow you down. It's an interesting one, though. I mean, the power of the Sheeran brand alone, I mean, this is top selling on Thomann already, both of these models. There's a smaller model as well. I know, Paulie, what do you think? Have you tried looping? It's a very specific skill.
It's a total art. I used to remember kind of seeing people like support acts when I used to gig doing these kind of looping shows for, you know, a whole hour or something, and I'm like, wow, the jeopardy of it. Not having anything prepared, you know, your percussion track is just a tambourine that you whack in like and make up on the spot, but it looked like it was very freeing, you know, especially the ones that can mute parts in and out to do different sections. But yeah, in terms of the Sheeran brand, it's interesting. I imagine it'll attract a lot of people, but it might put other people off. Do you get me?
Sure.
Because he's not universally
like... He's a Marmite
sort
of guy, yeah.
I think back to one of his first songs. I can't remember exactly what it was called, but it was he was singing "You Need Me and I Don't Need You." And that song, it had such kind of swagger and passion and, you know, burning fire. And I haven't really seen that fire from him since. So I'd like him to do, you know, something a bit more fiery, personally.
maybe a hot loop pink or looper or something. Yeah, I don't know whether that
maybe
would affect
the technology. Maybe a
hot pink looper.
There we go.
Yeah, it does look good. But what's interesting is I don't remember anybody, a pop brand like this. I mean, you used to get it with a guitar endorsees, or you'd get the kind of Slash Les Paul copy or something, but sure, not like this kind of thing. I don't know, Heimbach, I mean, you do tape looping. Very different dynamic to that, but nonetheless, still the Jeopardy, as you've already discussed in the pre-show. Loopers themselves, though, I mean, it's such a frictionless workflow if you've got the kind of brain that can just spit out this stuff on demand, which obviously Sheeran does and other people do too.
Yeah, I'm torn on like traditional loopers and these loop sessions, because I feel I've watched the same show from many artists and they're all playing the same song. Build up then, and I got tired quickly, because when this looping trend came out, I think 20 years ago and stuff like that, especially with the multi-layered loopers, it felt like, yeah, really everybody is playing the same track, because you're seeing someone build the piece. And you always have a build up. There's never two changes at the same time or three changes at the same time, which for me creates impact. So I got kind of bored with that kind of looping a long time ago. And I mean, I've been looping myself a lot in my work. So I've literally got a tape loop here with a Nagra that I lose a lot. And my Seat Lombard Coco Quantus, which is my favorite looper, is basically, yeah, two 8-bit loopers, which adds a sound and creates all kinds of different things, and they're all untimed. They all drift in time. So it's like you put something in, on a tape loop, you put something on a Seat Lombard Coco Quantus, and it just starts giving you something new. You're just like creating, it's the repetitions always change, and that's something I enjoy more. And I do that a lot because there's unpredictability when you put things into that flow where nothing is perfectly synced up. And you are able to do like more changes because there's constant changes all the time, this phasing that you're getting even. I love that kind of loose looping much more.
Mm. Have you tried the Soma Cosmos? That's a very similar sort of concept.
Yeah.
It doesn't have two loopers, but it has a wonky looper, which I found quite difficult to deal with, but it's good for non-rhythmical stuff where you don't have to have beat boundaries and anything like that, but that's it tends to work.
I've used that together with the Lyra 8. But I've also made my own looper that you can get on the iPhone called Brambos Gauss. So, and that's like all the stuff I learned from tape looping, and then combined with the sequencer and all this stuff combined, it's very free. And that's for me like the ideal looper right now. So I made my own in the end.
Yeah, well, that makes
a bit like Ed Sheeran. Both of you, I guess, like driven it.
Only 3 years earlier.
Yes, that's true. And I know, Sam. I mean, we loop. I mean, I've seen you. You use is it a Keystep Pro or a Keystep where the sequence is probably running? So there's MIDI looping going on. It's different.
At the start, when I was doing the synthesizers, I was trying to figure out what to make. The idea of the looper seemed quite a magical thing, because it means you're making something out of nothing. As in, if you have something in mind that is from nothing, you could get to it quite quick. Obviously, you know, it's a certain time. There's a certain style to it. But I was thinking, do I start looping either A with audio or B with MIDI? Because they're both fundamentally different, because the MIDI one's before the synthesizer, the audio one's after the synthesizer. Ultimately, I went for the one before, and also the one before, I mean, I have no idea what's in the Ed Sheeran one, but maybe he's got things where you're able to record the phrase, jump to the next phrase, build that one up, and then go back to the next one. That's probably in a load of other loopers, isn't it? I haven't looked at loopers recently, but the fact that it's a big foot pedal thing is pretty good, because the Boss one, it's all big rubber pads, isn't it? So that's made for people's hands.
So
I reckon the big selling point is just for guitar, whoever needs it on the floor, keyboard players, things like that. I think it looks pretty fancy.
That's a good idea, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You sort of almost need a MIDI controller to work with an RC505. The RC505 is Mark II. I reviewed it, and it is an amazing piece of equipment because you can apply effects on the input, on the output. It's got two... But you've got these... It's insanely complicated. That's the only problem, because you can mark a point. So you can get to a point and then mark it and then get rid of a load of stuff, do something else, and then go back to the mark point and it'll load it. So you can have dramatic impacts, but you sort of need a quantum physics degree to be able to get your head around how you would make that work.
I suppose it's the same as learning guitar, though. Like learning guitar is a big learning curve, so you've got to be really committed to learn the looper. It's another instrument, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think the thing is finding your workflow that works. It just provides you with a number of options, which is possibly the thing. Okay, I'm just going to... I think we should probably move on to this last topic, if everybody's got time, because that means I can play the ad first, because that's part of it. And I suppose... Well, it's not part of it. It just so happens to be in sync. So I'll play that now.
Reintroducing Trash, your favorite creative distortion plugin from iZotope. Break, distort, and mangle your track.
Oops.
We lost it.
I've got to play that again now. How embarrassing. No, not even that one. I knew I'd blow it at some point.
Reintroducing Trash, your favorite creative distortion plugin from iZotope. Break, distort, and mangle your tracks with an endless assortment of chaotic combinations. Transform your sound in ways you never imagined. Take your tracks to new, distorted dimensions with the Trash module. Twist things even further and send your audio into another space with the Convolve module. Add energy and depth to your sound with the new Envelope Follower. Say goodbye to writer's block and distort without limits. iZotope Trash. Distortion redefined.
Indeed. So apologies for that double click there. We also want to say that you can save 10% on that. I think it's available... intro price, I think. I think I've got a list of it here. Oh, somewhere there. Yeah. There it is.
$1 million.
Is there such a thing as a classic plug-in distortion, I suppose, is the question, isn't it? And this has been reissued. This is like 13 years old, the original one, which was the original Trash would have been fairly crass in terms of what it would do, because there wasn't a much digital headroom at that point to mess around with. Now we've got a lot more going on. I think, Paulie, you had a guitar thing, right? I'm guessing you are a fan of Trash, right? So I'll come to you first.
Trash, like, if I'm working in the DAW, Trash ends up on every single track I do, one way or another. And I think it's probably to do with there's a set signal path which just works with me. There's a pre-filter, then you get the distortion, which goes from anything from, like, you know, kind of mid-level fuzz to total annihilation. It kind of makes it sound like a broken Sega Mega Drive, your guitar, at times. I'll show you in a sec. A post-filter, then you've got your... kind of IR stuff, impulse response stuff, like run it through a metal can or something. And then the thing on the original version, which isn't on the new one, is like a crusty digital delay. So they've obviously taken the digital delay out to kind of make it a little bit more focused. And there's also a lot more morphing stuff on the new variant. As you could see, there was like tweaking of like waveforms and stuff. On the original version, you kind of pick a kind of distortion preset, and then you can change the gain, but you can't kind of alter it, essentially. Wow. But yeah, there's for guitar, there's kind of two wrong mouse. There's two presets I usually do. I've no idea if this is the Jeopardy again of live stuff.
Live plug-in playthrough. Oh, there we go.
So this is my kind of more standard kind of fuzzy sound if I'm playing, you know.
It's that, I tell you what, it reminds kind of me vibes. Of. It reminds me of one of those old. There was a class of pedals that used to have that brown fade, isn't it? Where it would actually emulate the dying battery. I don't know whether that was a symptom of the.
Interesting. And then the total crazy one. And if you play mutes on it, it just goes absolutely wild.
Hopefully this will come through.
Preset. I think I called it balls.
Balls?
This is it. Yeah, balls. You'll already hear a bit of a buzz. But just... It's just got such a nasty sound to it.
Oh, there's a frazzle to it.
I don't think we're getting the full...
Yeah, not getting
it's
the full,
fascinating.
Full
sonic... Are you hearing? I'm hearing like a compression, a voice compression algorithm at work here.
I think
it
so.
It sounds
as well.
Like somebody's talking. I sound like somebody's talking from the guitar. It's lovely. I love that effect. I use that with Isotope a lot.
There we go.
Excellent. Thank you, Paulie. It's interesting. I mean, Heimbach, you were saying that the original Trash was something that you were familiar with. And I guess the digital world that you inhabit, the stuff that you make in conjunction with your partners is generally quite sort of unpredictable. And there's a lot of drive and distortion and grit in it as well. So,
yeah, it's a lot. And to get that right in digital, it's so hard. Like I spend days, weeks just listening to different overtones and filters and different settings and modulations to get it, to get all these weird processes right. And I mean, the original Isotope, I used that and it was a fun playground of distortion. So I enjoyed that. So, and I think one of my very early, going way back when I used way more plugins to get distortion, I think there was a plugin called Cyanide, which sounded
Cyanide.
Cyanide too. That was also one with a really rough digital distortion plugin I liked.
What's the Sound Toys one?
Decapitator.
Decapitator, that's the one. Yeah.
Decapitator.
And there
what's
was
a, do you have a distortion a
damage,
plugin?
There was Audio Damage did a couple as well, didn't they? Which were really good. Some of the early drive and compression ones. I can't remember what they were now. But yeah. It's an interesting area, isn't it? I mean, how we've kind of gone full circle and now we're sort of craving, you know, we initially digital sort of showed us the way of sort of pristine, beautiful CD quality audio, and now we're craving everything being messed up and unpredictable and broken. You know, those are the sounds which seem to draw the ear, or at least, you know, well, it goes back to rock, the invention of rock and roll, isn't it? Rock and roll was sort of the sound of broken and distorted things generated adrenaline in the listener because it sounds like there's something deeply wrong, you know, and it's just those sort of harmonics and overtones do that, and that's what made it so exciting, and because it had never been heard before, and now we're
cutting
sort of
your paper speaker cone.
That all of that,
you know,
stuff.
On purpose.
Exactly, it's interesting. Sam, what do you turn to for? I mean, you've got plenty of gain, I'd imagine, in around the place. Do you use any digital gain?
No. I don't actually. No, that's kind of strange. Like sometimes I just record it in too hot and forget, and then try and work backwards. No, I'm joking. I don't really. There's actually there is a plugin. I've had it for yonks. It's what is that? Kramer tape. The Waves one. It's just it's got a flux knob on it, and it just softens it off a bit if it ever needs it, which is quite rare. But have you got a distortion one in your whole line?
Yes, two. There's one in Lines, literally, which is this telephone line simulator, and they've got like simulated distortion from that piece of test equipment, which is where you can dial in the different harmonics and then you can feed it back into itself, and that creates all kinds of wildness. And then there's Dials, which is this vintage channel strip, which is more round, but I like to use the same thing that I do in analog. I like to do with these plugins, like run three in a row, you know, because I've got
parallel or in series.
In series. So one feeds into feeds into the other, and all that drive builds. And then I think it's oftentimes sounds even better when you just, there's a bit of drive, there's a bit of drive, and there's a bit of drive, than if you just pull up one and make that full drive.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's like the same thing, like when on the mixing board here, I do the same thing, like the input overdrives, then I'd overdrive the tape, I overdrive the limiter, and all this adds and adds and builds. And you can copy that technique basically in digital by just running different tastes of distortion boxes, like a soft one and the input, a hard one after, and that can really shape the sound.
And that makes it a lot more possible to do that in a computer than in real life, because you'd have to buy three of the same things. I know you've done that sometimes, Stefan, but not everybody can. I guess with a plugin, actually, you only need to buy one and then you just copy it. I'm sounding like a proper stupid person that doesn't have to use plugins.
Right, you found the hack.
You could. I've just remembered it was, I remember because I bought Rough Rider Pro and Combinat. Those were the two from Audio Damage. And I remember that at the time they were the sort of the bee's knees. And I remember, because I got one of the jobs that I was given when I was working on an album was inspiration. I was given a whole load of tracks that they'd recorded the drum beats for. You know, emulated and tried to get it as close as possible. And then my job was to try and get it to sound as close to the recorded version of the original using the beats that had been supplied. And it was Combinat and Rough Rider that did it every time, just to sort of give it that extra like tape drive and just saturation, and particularly for sort of stuff like Motown and Philly and 70s recordings that were a bit trashy. Absolutely. And I was very pleased with the results in the end, but that's all that was available at the time. I expect Trash was probably around at that point, but...
What did you have to do again? So they gave you the drum beat from somebody playing, but they wanted it to sound, because it was played after. Is this to clear samples, I'm guessing?
That was part of it. So they recorded the drum parts to sort of tracks that they liked the groove of. Got as close as they could in terms, you know, if the snare drum was massive, they'd tune it down or whatever, you know. So there was a bit of, and then, but they wanted it to sound more like the final recordings, you know, with the heavy compression and stuff. So that was my job. Just so that they could then take that away and write to. It wasn't necessarily what would end up as the whole thing.
Sure.
Some of it was still there at the end, but most of it got kind of just brushed aside. It was just to get the inspiration going. So, you know,
get the ball rolling.
Get the ball rolling, exactly.
Nice.
All of that stuff. I should also point out there's AUV3 version, so you can run it on your iPad as well, which is the first. So it'll run inside Logic, which is kind of cool, as a native plugin, I suppose.
So you got Logic on an iPad?
Well, yeah, but if you've got an AUV3, I think it'll work in Logic because it's this plugin format that runs natively. I think that's right. I mean, I'm sure the chat room will. That's what it said in the blurb that I cursorily read before, but while not preparing very well for this topic. It's an interesting thing, though, isn't it? All of that kind of the notion of all of that that distortion and the different flavors of it that one chooses. I'm trying to remember the name of those pedals. They were hand painted. They had that little boxes, and they were hand
Fuzz Factory.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was. Yeah, what was it?
Did it have a factory on the front and clouds? It was like hand drawn of a cloud and a building.
Hand painted effects pedals. They were. Oh, they were all the rage.
Back in 2000.
I'm trying to remember what they were. I just cannot find them. There will be. Zvex, that's it. Zvex,
Fuzz Factory.
It is the Fuzz.
Well done.
Yeah, because
bonus point to Sam.
It blew my mind when I'm hearing. I mean, I was only a kid at the time, but it blew my mind listening to, what's the Muse guy's guitar, and just the sounds that it made, and that was Fuzz Factory. It was just so the fuzz, the idea of something that was so. It was just so. I can't do it with my mouth. That's the problem. It's amazing.
Well, you could record it and then distort it afterwards. I mean, or sing it through a kazoo. That would probably give you the sense of distortion. I think that could work.
That's the thing.
That's the thing.
Kazoo's basically like a broken speaker cone. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't want to hold everybody up too much longer, so I do appreciate you coming on, and I do heartily recommend that Sam, you're previewing you're premiering a video tonight as well. So you both are doing it.
Yes. So the idea is there's five songs. The first video, which is the one that I've put up, is on the first track, and Stefan's is on track two and three, and then there's another couple of videos coming at some point on the other two.
Right.
Exactly.
So yeah, the times, what is it? It's in 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes.
That's exactly.
Oh yes, and then right after my premiere goes live, and so you can just hang out there right from this and yeah, can chat on.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. That sounds perfect. Excellent. So what's next for you, Sam? Have you got a big project to come? And we must come down to your museum, because we've been meaning to say we would at some point. Well, maybe in the summer when the weather's a bit nicer, assuming it.
It's all right. I think, fingers crossed, it's going to be around for a long while, and it just gets bigger every time. But the next project is I've just got to get ready for this playing a tour. I can't remember the tour in Europe. It's starting in a week, and that's why this is in pieces. I've got to fix the synthesizer to try and get it as good as I can. Oh, and using the brand new, these are my favorite. They don't feed back. It's amazing. They're hands-free. What are they called again? Beyerdynamic DT-797s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can't recommend highly. They're basically which ones are these? 770s, but with a pretty decent, I think it's even dynamic mic. Anyway.
Yeah, it would be a dynamic. We use dynamic cardioids for shows as well. And they're Shaws, which make a massive difference. The sound rejection is amazing for a cardioid headset. And if they're good enough, you'll get that great sound. Well, good luck with that. Where's the first date?
You're asking me too many questions that I'm going to forget.
I'm sure
just quickly go. Yeah, please Google, because it's all a mush up there.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It sounds like you got a lot on, but we look forward to it. Heinbach, what about you? I guess the EP's out, and then you're obviously planning the next hiring of a mansion for the next EP. Or
exactly.
The nuclear bunker or whatever it may be, you know, the exclusive. Yeah. What's next for you?
I've been working on a new plugin with Audio Thing, which will be a free one, but it's like the most complicated one we've ever done. It took over 2 years to develop, but it's very cool, and we both get to do a bit of pixel art also for it, which is lovely. So, but yeah, that's probably the next big project. And then another thing in live music, I'm going to the old WDR studio for electronic music, where Stockhausen and basically electronic music comes from in Germany. And I'm going to, it's all packed up, but I get to go there, unpack a few things, play with them, and prepare a performance for a festival in Witten for new music. And I'll be playing that.
Nice. That sounds great.
Are you playing straight afterwards?
What do you mean?
Are you going there, practicing, and then playing the show?
I'm going to the studio. I'm going to like record with the things. I'm going to do a bunch of tape loops, Klanggemische, and then I'm going to work with a trio who play synthesizers, and they work basically to bring electronic music on stage. And I'm going to play my electronium, my vacuum tube synthesizer hiding in an accordion.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to work on...
I thought you were talking about a Roland V accordion there. I thought somebody must use one, and then maybe it's you, but it's not.
No. With
D-beams. Mine is from the 50s.
of course. Well, of course, hopefully we'll see you both, or certainly Heinbach, maybe Sam as well, at Superbooth, because we're getting ready for all of that as well. That's going to be sun shine, and it'd be all lovely. Paulie, what about you? What's next for you?
So I've got a live date coming up, which is cool.
Oh, yeah,
it's going to be on the 29th of June. It's part of a huge Commodore Amiga Expo that's happening in Nottingham. And a bunch of us who like make, you know, Amiga-focused music. Like, there's a drum and bass guy called Pete Cannon. He's pretty famous. David Wise, who wrote the music to Donkey Kong Country and stuff like that, he's playing it. And me. So that would be cool. So I'm going to pack up my Amigas and my MIDI and everything like that and do that in June. And it's going to be absolutely amazing, because I haven't had to do any of the work. As I said, if you tour with old computers, people come along just to see the old computers. Yeah. Doesn't matter who's playing the music. It's great. And one last thing, if that's okay, Nick.
Yeah, of course.
I usually do this at the start of the show, but in this week's What Crap Has Paulie Gotten Through the Posts, obsolete junk, is this beauty. It's Boss RSD 10.
Is that the delay?
Delay one.
Oh, it's the
I've already got the RPS pitch shifter, but this one's the RSD 10 sampler delay, which is going to be absolutely chaotic when you kind of downsample it and run CV into it. So I'm looking forward to doing a video on that.
Are you going through that?
You're going to put because the Amiga's already 8-bit, isn't it? So let's downsample it some more.
Yeah.
You could downsample it and then upsample it into an Amiga if you go far enough. That would be really meta.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, definitely. Make it hi-fi. Yeah.
Hi-fi. Well, lovely to have you all. Thank you so much for being on. All the best with the new EP. Like I say, it can grab that pretty much. Oh, let me see. I can probably let me see if I can post the link without having to. Here we go. If I do that, I think that will post the link. There we go. Bandcamp Pipe Dreams. Buy it now. A very, very worthwhile endeavour. And thanks, guys, for making it and also for coming on the show as well. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
That's it for this week. We'll see you all next time. That was Sonic Talk, episode 793. See you next week. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye.